Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great start to your week, wherever and however you may be listening or watching us across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Highland. It's February 12th, 2024, the day after Super Bowl 58 between the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. Got plenty to talk about recapping the Super Bowl today. And there's just so much I want to get to, but I'm going to have to pare it down because I don't know about you guys, and this is probably not the first piece of Super Bowl reaction programming that you've listened or watched, but there's going to be a lot of discussion about the greatest this and the dynasty that, and we'll get to that a little bit at the end. And how that affects the favorite football team of a lot of my listeners and myself. But where I want to begin, though, is with the predictions I made on Thursday night. I said the game was going to come down to three things. I said coaching, I said turnovers, and I said teams getting a fast start. I also said that in August, this was a prediction I had made. The prediction I made in August for the first time, I think, since 2014. Now, granted, there's not record of a lot of these. There are records of the ones that I talk about making on this program. But I remember telling a buddy distinctly in 2014, in around the beginning of the season, specifically Jackson Winslow, who's been a guest on this program, I told him that the Pats would beat the Seahawks. I think that was the last time I had both the victor and the matchup correct preseason. This year, I chose Kansas City over San Francisco in the Super Bowl, and that happened. All right, so we have my macro prediction from August that has come true. But more importantly to me and my ego, I guess, we have the predictions I made basically being the three deciding outcomes of the game. Now, look, there's such vague categories. I can see, you know, you could make an argument about really any of those things in any certain play in the game. But what I'm going to tell you is those three things I talked about, I think, were the most influential, biases aside. You'd be hard-pressed to find any Super Bowl post-game analysis that didn't talk about coaching decisions made by Kyle Shanahan. You'd be hard-pressed to find any post-game Super Bowl analysis from anybody that doesn't talk about San Francisco's lack of capitalization on turnovers and the Chiefs' the Niners' muffed punt leading to the Chiefs' touchdown and the momentum change in the game. Finally, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who isn't talking about San Francisco not being able to maintain their fast start and sputtering in the third quarter. So those three things I talked about on Thursday were the deciding factors in the game. We'll start with the momentum at the beginning of the game. I thought San Francisco moved the ball really well. I thought they were running the ball effectively. I thought they were getting off to a fast start. They showed that they could bully the front seven of Kansas City early in the game. The issue was they turned the ball over on that first drive, right? Didn't result in points. All right. Then the Chiefs basically did the same thing. They got deep in San Francisco territory and they coughed up the ball. All right. So we have a turnover negation of the highest order in the Super Bowl. Seemed like nobody wanted to score. Likewise, San Francisco finally gets their field goal. Jake Moody sets a record for a 55-yarder, the longest made field goal in the Super Bowl. Then San Francisco quickly, a few possessions later, gets that big double pass touchdown in which, I forget his last name. I would remember his name if they won the game because he probably would have been the MVP. But anyway, he laterals it back to Christian McCaffrey, who scores a touchdown. All right, so San Francisco gets off to this fast start. Then the third quarter happens and they absolutely pee down their leg. Despite getting a, this is what's crazy to me. Kansas City coughed up the ball twice. They had multiple fumbles. They had a lot of negative plays. And San Francisco had nothing to show for it. Because as weird as it was for them to cough up the ball on their first possession and give that possession away in the first quarter, Kansas City did the same thing in the third quarter after halftime. But neither team capitalized on that turnover. So San Francisco was basically getting a bunch of breaks and doing nothing with it. And in the third quarter, they had, up until their final possession, 3 yards of offense. So they were bad. They were bad in the third quarter. Kyle Shanahan got away from the run game. We'll get more on coaching in a second. And so the fast start was gone. All right, but that leads me to my second thing. We've talked a little bit about the turnovers, but think about this game for a second, right? Turnovers hadn't really meant much, and then all of a sudden, after you've had situations where teams have traded turnovers with not a lot of points to show for it, the Chiefs stall out. San Francisco makes a series of great stops to force a punt after it looked like the Chiefs were going to move the ball. And they muff the punt. Leads to a Chiefs recovery and an immediate touchdown thereafter. And at that point, the Chiefs were going to win the game. That was the momentum shift. There have been times when there has been a momentum shift in the Super Bowl that big, and nobody really took that torch and ran with it. But in this situation, and by the way, what I mean is, think about that Larry Fitzgerald touchdown in Super Bowl 43, I believe. Larry Fitzgerald runs away with a touchdown. It looks like they're going to be the Super Bowl champions, Arizona, that is. And then all of a sudden, the momentum completely flips back in Pittsburgh way, and you get a Santonio Holmes game-winning touchdown. So in this way, you had a situation where San Francisco was punching Kansas City in the mouth defensively over and over and over and over and over again. And then they give up a short field. And this time there was no reverse luck or reverse fortune. Kansas City from that point on was a team that was going to win the game. The only other time, and this leads me to my third thing, the only other time the game was in doubt for the Chiefs was when Kansas City goes, ties the game, right? I believe it was, let's see, it was 13-10, then it was 13-13. Then you had, yes, it was 13-13. Then you had a situation where the Niners had the ball and they had about 5 minutes and change left. I turned to my father and I said, it's tie game, 5 minutes left. Purdy, what he wants to do is run this ball all the way down to nothing. Manage the game, right? That's been the big knock on Brock Purdy. He's the game manager, all right? Let him manage that game. Let him do that. If that's supposedly what he does best, let him do that. Let them run the ball. And they did. They had, I don't remember the down and distance. I really should have the box score in front of me. But we all watched the game. We know what happened. They get down to the 2 minute warning and Kyle Shanahan 2017 appears out of nowhere, right? It's like Beetlejuice. You say it three times and Kyle Shanahan in an Atlanta Falcons uniform emerges from the Homer Simpson bush patch, right? Like, that's what it is. That's what you had. You had the emergence of choking Kyle Shanahan right there on third and five. Because a lot of people were like, oh, well, if you get a first down there, the game is essentially over. It's going to be, I remember turning to my parents. I said, it's going to be super hard. I think it was 3rd and 5 at like the 14 or something. Maybe even the as far back as the 19 or the 20 yard line. They were deep. If not in the red zone, very close to it. If they got a first down there, you go to the 2-minute warning. You're inside the 2-minute warning. The Chiefs are going to take a timeout. And now they have one less timeout. And now you can run the ball more. And at most, right, if they take their timeouts, Kansas City is going to get the ball back They're going to get the ball back with probably like 50 seconds left and no timeouts to get a field goal. Now, Mahomes can do that, but I mean, it's a lot tougher of a task, right? All it takes is a couple negative plays and a sack, right? Or a tackle in bounds, and that whole thing blows up in its face. And, you know, instead of going to overtime, Shanahan is standing there with a Lombardi trophy in his hands. But what he had to do is he had to revert back to what lost him Super Bowls as a coordinator in Atlanta, which is he wanted to throw the ball and be the smartest guy in the room. Now, this drive was extended. Sorry, the drive before when they got the touchdown and missed the extra point was extended on a 4th and 3 play that a lot of people thought he should kick on. So usually you would think, trust the gut of Kyle Shanahan there. But he just watched 2 weeks ago Dan Campbell pee down his leg doing the same thing, essentially. You know, they forewent a chance to manage the clock. And, you know, people are like, don't screw around with the clock. Just go score. Yeah, that's easier said than done when you have Mahomes on the other side. So, in my opinion, at 3rd and 5, you run the ball. Everybody knows, or you pull out your best play. It didn't look like they pulled out their best play. So Shanahan, they throw the ball. I would have run the ball. Incomplete. Now they're kicking, and they have now 1:50 for Mahomes to go down and score a touchdown. Of course, he doesn't do that. You almost get a Travis Kelce walk-off TD. You almost get a few other weird plays on that entire drive. And, you know, had Kansas City needed a touchdown there, because if Jake Moody didn't miss his extra point, you know, you'd be looking at a situation where the San Francisco 49ers probably win that game. So, you know, at the end of the day, like, there's a ton of different discussions to talk about. Harrison Butker ended up breaking that record set by Jake Moody for the longest field goal. But essentially, I'm not going to regurgitate the rest of the game to you. We all watched it. But I think about some of these coaching decisions, and they look even worse now that reports have come out that have explained that Kyle Shanahan may not have understood the overtime rules. I still think he made the right call going into overtime to take the ball, because then you're giving your defense a break, who has absolutely been gassed after that last drive with all that intensity. And it lets Brock Purdy kind of settle back in and not have to stand there and watch Mahomes go score a touchdown and then know that he has to go do it too. Like, you kind of give your young quarterback the keys to the car. And I don't think Purdy really made a big mistake last night. He made a couple small ones, but I don't think he made like a huge mistake that cost him the game. He made a couple great throws, including on that overtime drive. I think he got drilled by Chris Jones on a particular throw that probably would have won them the game in overtime or late in the fourth quarter. I forget when exactly, but I just look back to Shanahan and I say, dude, what are you doing? Also, I believe his name is Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. They just diced. They absolutely diced the 49ers on that last drive to win the game. And ultimately, when it comes down to coaching, It comes down to decisions at big spots. And I think the 49ers ultimately, as they have done for a lot of in my lifetime, lost big games. They lose a punt. They, not necessarily with Shanahan and Purdy, but, with Jimmy G or with Colin Kaepernick or Alex Smith or whomever, they get in these situations and they just lose. You know, I heard it said they were like the Celtics or the Bruins, right? Like they get into the postseason and they just absolutely forget what they're doing. And I think Shanahan failed Purdy a little bit. I think Purdy played well enough to win. I don't think he was a world beater by any means. But he certainly was poised enough. And I feel as though he had a lot of, of potential there. He made some really good throws, some really tight windows, but you got to tip your hat to Mahomes. Mahomes did it all last night. He ran for a first down when he needed to. I think it was that fourth and four it was, it was a fourth and one. That was pretty much the game. All right. That was another situation where they just absolutely got outcoached and outplayed in the biggest moments. And Mahomes ultimately made the key plays when they had to be made. And he's the ultimate X factor. Pat Mahomes is the ultimate X factor. There's no two ways about it. I talked at the outset that there's going to be a lot of discussion about dynasty this, goat that, greatest of this, greatest of that. You know, we're going to be talking about that for a long time. It's very quickly going to make its way onto the sports talk radio's greatest hits, right? When there's nothing else to talk about, you talk about, do steroid guys belong in the Hall of Fame? Is it more Brady or Belichick? Is it Brady or is it Mahomes? Is it Jordan? Is it LeBron? I mean, these are what we talk about. And we're going to have decades to talk about who's the greatest quarterback of all time. What I'm going to tell you is pretty simple. And I wrote about it over at Sportland USA, and I'll put it in the link to this podcast as well. But when you sit back for a moment, Mahomes has 3 Super Bowl rings. In my opinion, he's already the 3rd best quarterback of all time. I think he, at the lowest you can have him at this point, would be 4. And whether you put Bradshaw or Manning or somebody else or Marino or Elway in the 3 slot ahead of Mahomes is up to you. And then 2, I still have Joe Montana. Number 1 is obviously Brady. That is the discussion you're going to start having. So, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about it. Personally, I think he's up there. Definitely. I think he was top 5 before this year. I think now he's like certainly top 5, undoubted. There were a lot of question marks. Can he win on the road? Can he win with a, less prolific supporting cast? He's done both of those things. And ultimately for Mahomes, the big wrinkle still, and this is what's going to make this GOAT debate that we're going to have for the next decade plus very fun, is that Brady has a 2-ring advantage on him. Well, he has a +4 advantage, but the reason why it's a +4 advantage and not even, in my opinion, is because Brady beat Mahomes head-to-head in the playoffs twice. And in both of those cases, Brady went on to win a Super Bowl with the Patriots and then one with the Buccaneers. Those were Super Bowls that the Chiefs probably would have won. So had those happened, Mahomes would have won a Super Bowl in 18, 19, 20, 22, and 23. He would have won 5 in 6 years. All right? Brady would have won 5 in 19 years. So, or actually more like 5 in 16 years. That would be a debate. That would be probably advantage Mahomes. But the reason why we're not having that debate is because Tom Brady beat Mahomes head-to-head in the playoffs twice, including 1 Super Bowl. That's a +4 advantage right there. Right? He had 5 rings. Mahomes had 0. Then Brady had 6. Mahomes had 0 still. And then Mahomes had 1. Then Brady had 7. And now Mahomes has 2 and 3. So that's a plus 4 difference right there. And that's what's going to make this GOAT debate really fun. Is, look, if Mahomes gets 7 and they're tied at 7, you got to give edge Brady, right? Brady beat Mahomes in the Super Bowl, and he beat him in an AFC Championship game. That's my take right now on February 12th, 2024. Like I said, we're going to have a ton of time to talk about that. But the second thing, and this is what I'll close with, it's really easy to crown somebody a dynasty, right? People were pretty much already calling this Chiefs team a dynasty before last night. I think last night ultimately and officially, I should say, cemented it. But it's a lot harder to keep that dynasty going. I wrote about this over at Sportland USA, so I encourage you to go check out that link. But when the Patriots repeated as champs in 2004, and they were standing there in the spring of 05, Brewski's standing there with 3 fingers, we've won 3. You've got Gil Santos saying, yes, it's a dynasty over the radio. Then, you know, Teddy Bruschi had a stroke. A lot of that team was never the same. They aged fast. Belichick's dad died and he had to miss time the following year. Brady lost his first game in Denver in 2005. Then, you know, you had that debacle in Indy and then the perfect season gone wrong and then the ACL injury and then a couple one and dones. And next thing you know, you had another Giants loss mixed in there, a couple more AFC Championship losses. Fast forward, it's been 10 years since you won a Super Bowl, just like that. Right? So it's a lot harder to keep the dynasty going and to win another title than it is to claim that you're a dynasty. Because once you're a dynasty, in terms of whoever decides that, becomes a lot harder after that. And so with this Mahomes-Brady discussion, Patriots-Chiefs discussion, look, they're already halfway to the Patriots dynasty, and it's taken them about the same amount of time to get the 3 titles. Patriots did 3 and 4. Chiefs have done 3 and 5 to begin it. But it's a lot harder to keep that going. The one thing they have going for them is Mahomes is 28. Right? Mahomes is 28. And I believe Brady was 27 when he won his 3rd. I think he was 27, going to be 28 when he won his 3rd. So they're roughly the same age. Longevity is the big question. I think Mahomes will probably play another 10 years. And if he plays another 10 years, it's safe to say he's a lock to make the Super Bowl at least 5 out of those 10 years. And if he wins 3 out of those 5 Super Bowls, then you're looking at a guy with 6 rings. He could even win more. Kelsey's probably going to retire pretty soon, maybe another year or two. Reed is getting up there in age. But the hardest thing is to keep the band together. Right? That's ultimately what sunk the Patriots dynasty and why Brady had to win his 7th ring somewhere else. You got to keep the band together. So, super, super fun to claim and call somebody a dynasty, and the Chiefs are one. But it's another thing to keep it going, and so that's their next test. They seem like they're up for the challenge. I wonder if the rest of the AFC is, too. All right, that's going to do it for this special Super Bowl-sized edition of Home Field Advantage. Hope you all enjoyed it. I've been critical on the Chiefs and Mahomes throughout my time on this show, but as I've said before, and I'll say again, you can't hate winners. You can try, but sometimes it's really hard. And you either die to be a hero, you either die as a hero or you live long enough to be a villain. All right, so that's where the Chiefs are now. I hope you liked the episode. You can check us out on social at Home Field Pod and on Twitter at Home Field Pod, Instagram, Twitter. You can also follow, share, like, subscribe, do all that stuff to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. But until next time, my name is Will Hyland. This has been Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.